Hey y'all, I'm Carrie.
Hey y'all, I'm Mandy.
And this is Monstrous. This episode contains topics and language that may not be suitable for all listeners, and topics that may be triggering for some. Listener discretion is advised. Okay. Round two.
Yeah.
With a different case. We recorded this once today. A different case. For whatever reason, it did not record. So, we're at it again. Mandy has picked one of the now three cases we've tried to record that we couldn't and did something else. So, you got this one today. The one we were supposed to have, we'll do another day.
Yeah, because that was a good one, so we still need to do it.
I know, so I got to give it a little while so that way you forget about it. And then I can tell you again so your reactions are genuine and it's not like, yeah, I just heard this.
Right.
Oh, okay. Jesus. So let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Okay, so you know how there are a ton of places that are said to be haunted, but then you look into it and there's either nothing or it's something so small that it's just not worth messing with. Well, the place I have today is not like that at all. It's filled to the brim with haunts. So much so that this place has been featured in Most Haunted Live, Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, World's Scariest Places, and Portals to Hell. Today we are diving into the Eastern State Penitentiary. So the penitentiary itself was meant to be a solution for hard prison conditions that inmates have been going through for some time in Philadelphia's other prisons. But I don't think it went according to plan because it's haunted. So in 1787, Dr. Benjamin Rush founded the Philadelphia Society for Alleviating the Miseries of Public Prisons, and his mission was to reform those prisons, and it was the first group of its kind. This group argued that they could go about reform in a much different way than they currently were, and their ideas were pretty interesting. In 1821, the Pennsylvania legislature decided to listen to what they had to say, and they approved funding for the world's first real penitentiary. So before 1821, penitentiaries like what we imagine today were not in existence. This would later become the Eastern State Penitentiary. They received 12 acres of land and $800,000 to complete this project. In today's money, this would be $20,304,698.
Damn.
Right. So now, these people were stuck between four different architects. So to help them decide which one would get the job, they held a contest. Because that's what one does. Whichever architect could come up with the best design for the prison would get the job. Screw your references. You just draw out the best blueprint.
Right.
And it's yours. So the winner of this contest was a man named John Haviland. I believe that's how you say it. His blueprint was of a building in the shape of a wagon wheel with one central building right in the middle. And then there were seven blocks, which would later become the cell blocks, and these jetted out from the center. So exactly like what you would imagine on a wagon.
Okay.
So I do have a picture of it from the aerial view, which I'll post that on Facebook. Like I said, it looks exactly like a wagon wheel for all of those that don't have Facebook or can't get on to see it. So the whole goal of this shape and these cell blocks was to house 250 inmates total. In John's original blueprint, there would be a total of 256 cells. So this goal would give them six extra empty cells. But over the years, as inmates came and went, the prison had to undergo multiple additions because this goal of 250 inmates did not go as planned. Things went downhill pretty fast. The downfall here began with the construction in 1822. And by the time the construction was completed, it was 1836. So it took them 14 years to complete this prison.
Damn.
Yeah. Now, cell blocks 4 through 7 had become two story blocks rather than one story, like 1 through 3 were. Because at this point, there were so many inmates that they had to add floors to cell blocks 4 through 7. The prison itself was intentionally built on a hill 2 miles outside of the city in the town of Francisville. They did this on purpose so that way people below would be able to look at it from town, kind of like a constant reminder, you don't want to end up here, so you need to behave and not break the law. So it was built in almost a European castle-esque kind of way, which at this point, this way of building wasn't modern anymore. So it's built kind of like a Gothic style, which is kind of cool,
mm-hmm.
I think, anyway. So it was built to appear spooky and scary.
Oh, okay.
Like, when I think of this type of build and the fact that it's on top of a hill, I think of the Addams Family House. That's what I think of.
That'd be cool.
Because you know how, like, it was built on a hill above the rest of the town, and it was just creepy. That's what I picture. That's not what it looks like at all, but that's just what I picture.
Right.
The feel of it. Okay, so, like I said, it took 14 years to complete this prison, and that's because they kept having to change things because the inmate numbers kept increasing. But when it was all said and done, there were 30-foot walls built around the building, a 3-story administrative building, there was an intake facility, a kind of laundromat area, a kitchen, a hospital, and a place for the warden and his family to live on-site. Not all wardens live on-site of prisons, but it's actually pretty common. And so there's warding housing. So that way the warden can quickly respond to emergencies. It helps maintain prison operations, all of that. I don't know how I feel about my family living on the grounds of a prison.
Yeah. It depends, like, if it's a maximum security prison and stuff like that.
We'll get to what this prison was. But I definitely would not want my family on these grounds.
Oh, okay.
Yep, I've got a few of the inmates in here. Not ideal. So a little bit of later history about this place. In 1912, the deputy warden's grandson, Henry Inkler, was born inside the prison.
I don't know if I'd like that.
Yep, there's your two truths and a lie.
Yeah, most definitely.
He would win every fucking time with that one.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so you know how they put your place of birth on your birth certificate?
Yeah.
Well, his didn't have, like, a hospital place because he was born in Eastern State Penitentiary. And so instead of putting that out, they put ESP.
Damn.
So this kind of amps up, like, the safety concern for me. Because wardens aren't usually the most liked people in prisons. Mm-hmm. So I feel like your family being there, especially an infant, is a very big concern.
Right.
But that's just me. So now, the Eastern State Penitentiary was the first and pretty much the last of its kind. The system that they tried to use here was referred to as the Pennsylvania system or the separate system. So it was supposed to, quote unquote, bring out the inner light of inmates. I'm going to be the first one to say it, okay? Not everyone has an inner light. Which you can be flat out honest, not everyone does.
Mm-mm.
Okay. I mean, look at Ted Bundy. How about Ed Gein?
Yeah.
Not everyone has an inner light. Okay. So they had an idea and they ran with it though. All right. Started out great. They were really trying, but shortly after they began that run, they tripped and they rolled down that fucking hill that the prison was built on. Just rolled right down it. The way they wanted the prison to work was that the prison was to be silent at all times. You couldn't talk, you couldn't sing, no fighting, literally no noise at all. How you're going to do that with 250 people, I don't know. So each inmate was to be inside their cell 24 hours a day, with the exception of twice per day when they were let out for yard exercise, which was 30 minutes each time. So they were in their cells except for 1 hour a day.
Right.
And it was only 30 minutes at a time. Could you imagine?
When they went outside, could they make noise?
I couldn't find anything that said yes or no on that one. Like, I looked. I'm like, they're outside. Why wouldn't they be able to make noise? But I couldn't find anything. Everything I said, no noise at all.
That's fucking insane.
Right. So each inmate had what's called a cell neighbor. Okay. And it would be impossible for every single person to be let out of their cell one at a time for 30 minutes. So for this reason, anytime that a prisoner left their cell for this exercise, for any reason, they would take like two at a time because cell neighbors. Then they would cover their head with a hood to take them outside.
You're fucking them up more than what they already might be.
Pretty much, yeah. Literally anytime they left their cell, it did not matter what it was for. Covered their head with a black hood.
Yeah, no, I'm good.
Right. So they tried to play this whole thing off as a good thing. Because if you're rehabilitated and you're released, then by covering your face with this hood, no one would know that you were in prison. I'm not sure how much sense this makes because...
Kind of a nice concept, though.
Yeah, it's a nice concept. I get the point of it, but it's like, where does everybody in town think you went?
Superhero camp? Fuck, I don't know.
They went on a nice trip to the Bahamas or something.
Right.
And then what about your family? Doesn't your family know you're in prison?
You would think.
Right. Whatever. Me, I think they did it to keep the inmates from being able to figure out the layout of the prison to be able to try to escape.
Yeah, I didn't think about that. That's true.
Because if your head's covered, you have no idea which direction to go in.
Right.
Now, the other thing is there was no talking to the other inmates. So not only do you have no idea where you're going ever, you can't talk to anyone, which also keeps you from coming up with an escape plan or doing mm-hmm. any other illegal shit together.
Right.
So I can see the goal. I can see the point of it. But I feel like you're going a little too far.
Mm-hmm.
Thinking way too big at this point. So back to their exercise. Okay. Now, once they're done with their exercises, the guards would check the grounds and make sure that the inmate did not leave anything behind. They would be taken back to their cell, and then they would bring the next person out. So they're like, we got to check and make sure that they didn't leave no notes or nothing.
Right.
So the inmates were fed three times a day, obviously, and they were actually fed pretty well, but they weren't all led into a cafeteria to eat at once, which I think that's how they do it now.
Yeah, they do.
Unless you're in, like, solitary confinement or whatever. That's basically what this shit is.
Yeah.
So, they also weren't allowed, like, any front doors on the cells.
Then what did they have?
So, basically, it was like, I'm trying to think of an example. You've watched the movie The Green Mile, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You remember the big, heavy metal doors that were mm-hmm. on those cells, and it just had, like, that itty-bitty slot? That's what they had.
Damn.
Yeah, so it's really not a door. It's just a cutout of metal is basically what that is.
Yeah.
So that slot is where the guards would pass their food through. Here you go. So they were fed three times a day through this little slot. They were fed mostly meat and vegetables, and they were also allowed to have as many potatoes as they wanted. So, I mean, they ate pretty well. Now, at the time, the prison did have indoor plumbing and heating, which is crazy because not many places during this time had either one, let alone both. So this was a huge plus for the inmates. But the only light that actually, like, really came through was through the skylights. So if you lived in cell blocks 1 through 3, you had pretty decent light because they're only one story high. But if you lived in cell blocks 4 through 7 and you were on the first floor, you were pretty much screwed because your light came from the cells above yours. Because the cells above those on the second floor were the ones with the skylights.
Right.
So the only light on the first floor that you got was through the cracks in your cell.
It sucks.
Right. So all of this sounds crazy. But the goal here was to reform the prisoners and then send them out into the world as productive members of society. They're trying hard to accomplish this, but I don't understand how that is going to be accomplished with this.
Right.
Now, even though inmates weren't able to leave their cells, they were taught different trades from within inside their cells. They were taught things like cobbling, weaving, canning. They learned how to give haircuts. They were teaching them skills in order for them to provide for themselves once they got out, right? So, I know I seen your face. For everyone else that is wondering how in the world they were giving each other haircuts if they had to wear those hoods to avoid seeing or communicating with each other, I didn't forget that part, okay? There was a loophole. They could give each other haircuts. That was it. That's the only time they were allowed to interact.
Okay.
Which I kind of feel like that defeats the purpose.
Yeah.
Of the whole hood thing.
It does.
So when the penitentiary first opened, there was a barbershop in each cell block. And the inmates were supposed to keep their hair cut short and neat. So for this, they looked over the rules and allowed all the inmates to be together. But they were kept under very close watch by all the guards. And then every single razor that was used to cut their hair had to be signed in and out every single time they were used. So that way no one could get away with stealing one. So it's all organized. Like, at some point, even the guards trusted the inmates enough to cut their hair. There's no fucking way I'd be doing that. Your face.
No, I'm good.
I'm not trusting you with a razor. Because these weren't like the razors we have today. Like, these were like straight razors.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. But, like, if I was an inmate, I would trust you. But if I was the guard that was putting a bag over your head and all this shit, no, my guy, you are not fit to cut my shit.
Nope.
I'm good.
New way. Mm-mm. I imagine just the Sweeney Todd scene. Just
across
the throat. That's what I imagine. Okay. So it's important to note, which I'm pretty sure, I think I say it somewhere in here, but when the penitentiary was first opened, there were just thieves and petty criminals that were these inmates. There weren't murderers or big time criminals, nothing like that, but eventually it would get there. Now, if you talked when you weren't supposed to or stepped a single toe out of line, broke any of the rules at all, there were several different types of punishments that these inmates would face. So first they would start with limiting your exercise time so you wouldn't get to go outside. Then they would take away your extra food privileges so you'd only get 4 potatoes instead of 5. If you're taking away a potato. No, I learned my lesson. I'm sorry. Then the punishments would get worse and worse. So after they take your potato and you keep fucking up, there were cells built specifically for punishment. And these were called the dark cells, which were in block 4 and on the ground level. If you were sent to one of these dark cells, you would walk into a room that was completely painted black. The skylight was covered. So it was just a completely dark room, straight sensory deprivation going on here. This would fuck up your eyes because anytime you're in pure darkness like this, from just a few weeks to a few months, it can cause irreversible damage, which causes pain when you see sunlight of any kind. Like even just a regular house light makes your eyes hurt. But that was not the end of it. There were rumors that the prison had used what is known as the iron gag as punishment.
Mm-hmm.
So the iron gag is a medieval torture device. So the iron gag is a metal brace that the guard would use to put into the inmate's mouth. And some would say that it attached to their tongue. There were chains that were then attached to the brace and then cuffed around your wrists, which are typically tied behind your back. With this on, the more and more that you would struggle to get out of it, the tighter the brace would get around your tongue. And a lot of times it would end up ripping your tongue out. And then you would end up dying from those injuries because, I mean, you had your whole fucking tongue ripped out. And some people even would choke on their own tongue. Yeah.
I'm good.
Yeah. So this led to an investigation in 1835 when an inmate has supposedly died due to the use of the iron gag. But the prison officials were eventually exonerated.
Of course.
Why not? Right. And if that isn't bad enough for you, We're going to talk about the ice baths and the exposure to the elements next. Mm. So for this, an inmate was forced into an ice bath, or they would be forced to lay like on the ground while a guard poured buckets of freezing cold water on them. Then they would be taken outside in the wintry conditions, totally naked, and were left out there until ice began to form on different parts of their bodies.
That's insane.
Yeah, I'm good.
Yeah, no. Okay,
no thanks. In 1831, an inmate by the name of Seneca Plimley was one of the inmates who had suffered from these ice baths, and he was actually later released from prison not long after his ordeal. So this man was considered incurably insane after he was released.
Hell, I bet.
Right. Like, I would probably be too.
Right.
Now we're going to move on to the mad chair. So for this form of punishment, an inmate would be stripped to a chair, which is the mad chair. And it was done so tightly that they would lose blood circulation and they would be left there over the course of a day or two.
Damn.
Mm-hmm. Some people say there were several instances where inmates' limbs had to be amputated once they were freed because of the lack of circulation. Yeah. So now the final form of punishment they used was just the straitjacket. I feel like we all know what those are.
Mm-hmm.
So they would put an inmate in the straitjacket. They would gag them and then leave them in their cell for several days.
Damn.
If I wasn't crazy before going, I would be crazy by now.
Oh, most definitely.
You put me in a straitjacket, you gag me, and then leave me in a dark room for days. I feel like anybody would go crazy.
Yeah, I'd be done for.
Yeah. You would have to put me in a loony bin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the prison once had a visit from a pretty famous guy that I'm pretty sure everyone will know. That is Charles Dickens.
Nice.
So he visited Eastern State Penitentiary in 1842. He was allowed to speak to some of the inmates, and he was said to be so depressed by his visit there and how he saw that the prison was not doing things right at all, that he was like, no matter what their goal was in the beginning, what's going on here is beyond fucked up. He hated the entire idea of solitary confinement, which is basically what this entire prison was. So In January of 1842, Charles Dickens had come to America for the first time. He was here from that January to June of that same year. He would then go on to write a book titled American Notes, which is an account of his visit to the U.S. This book criticizes the vulgarity and meanness that he found within our country, which, same, my guy, same.
Right.
We live here, and I feel like we're all disgusted by how things are.
Mm-hmm.
And it hasn't changed much, okay? Now, in this book about the prison, he wrote, quote, "The system here is rigid, strict, and hopeless solitary confinement. I believe in its effects to be cruel and wrong. I hold this slow and daily tampering with the mysteries of the brain to be immeasurably worse than any torture of the body."
Wow.
Yep. So, he's basically saying that, like, yeah, they're fucking with their bodies, right? But what they're doing mentally is way more worse.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not wrong. Mm-mm. They're screwing these people up mentally so bad. So now, with the horrible conditions that most prisons house, nearly every single prison has escape attempts. And the Eastern State Penitentiary is no different. They had their fair share of attempted escapes, and they had one that was actually completed. Now, our first escape artist is William Hamilton. He had been arrested and sent to Eastern State in 1831 for the very serious crime of pig theft, which it's exactly what it sounds like. This man was going around stealing pigs. For some reason, the warden wanted William to be his personal waiter, and William obviously didn't have much of a choice in this matter. So after about a year of serving his sentence for stealing someone's pig, he was given an opportunity to escape when he was waiting for the warden and was left alone. He decided to make a break for his sweet escape. William got out onto the roof and then lowered himself down to the front of the building and then just vanished into the night.
Hmm, nice.
His freedom did not last long, though. He went right back to stealing pigs and was immediately sent back to prison.
What is with him and stealing pigs?
I don't know. So William ends up back in prison and again escaped in 1837 and again got out successfully, but again went right back to stealing pigs and was sent back to prison.
Oh, he deserves to go back at this point. He's annoying me. Like,
he did not learn his lesson the first time or the second time.
Right. Like, you're done, my guy.
Now, I don't want to blame anyone, but guards, this is your entire job. That is the whole reason you're there.
And he already did it once. So why would you give him the opportunity to do it again?
Right. Makes no sense. But on the other hand, in the 19th century, the guards at Eastern State Penitentiary were working 12-hour shifts 6 days a week. So they were exhausted. And by this point, I think they were all just kind of checked out. There was a ton of tension between the inmates and the guards for very clear reasons. Then, in 1884, the prison had its first guard murder, and those tensions got even worse. The Michael Doran was making his normal rounds one night when an inmate, Joseph Taylor, had come up behind him and started bludgeoning him to death with a metal bar. Then, once he was finished, Joseph turned right around and walked back to his cell, got into bed, and just went to sleep.
Yep. Well.
Yep. And this is where the first haunting of Eastern State comes from. Because now, in that very cell block, people say you can hear the guard walking around, his keys jingling, and a metal bar clanging.
Mm-hmm.
So now going back to 1877, by this year, there was a need to add more cell blocks. So remember, originally there were 7 cell blocks built. Now they're going to add more on top of those ones that are already there. So the warden at this time was Michael Cassidy, and he had changed quite a bit around here. He let go of the reins a little bit and lifted a lot of the rules. He believed that if you treated inmates like humans, then maybe they would act like humans when they're released back into society, which, duh.
Right.
He's like, this shit is not working. So rather than pouring ice over people and strapping them to chairs, let's do things a little different. So this guy was the prison's warden from 1881 to 1900 and ended up being the longest serving warden in the prison's history. So he must have been doing something right at some point. So Cassidy was the one that had designed the new cell blocks. These would be cell blocks 8 through 11. So these were a lot bigger than the cells in the other blocks. And that's because these did not include personal exercise yards. So that gave room for the cells to be larger. In the 1880s, cell block 3 was converted into a hospital that was equipped with an x-ray room, an operating room, and then eventually separate rooms for inmates that were suffering from tuberculosis. So these special rooms for the inmates with tuberculosis were big rooms, and they had like these big openings in the back that were covered with metal grate fencing to get fresh air to come in and out of the room. So, you know, you don't want all those nasty germs just lingering around. Now, in 1911, cell block 11 was completed, and it was the first cell block to be 3 stories high. And instead of having a skylight, each individual cell had a tiny window, and the ceilings weren't arched like the others were. So before this prison was built in that Gothic style, but these cell blocks were when things began to change architecturally in a very big way. Now, aside from this change, Eastern State was also about to have a very big structural change to the entire place. By the early 1900s, most of the individual confinement faded due to the overcrowding. They're like, these inmates cannot have their own rooms anymore. We got to put people together. Way too many motherfuckers in here. So now with all this, now with all these people, they begin using, you know, having classrooms, workshops. They're working together now. They're living together. They're learning together. They're now starting to earn wages and just being people, just in, you know, a different way than we do, obviously. Now, eventually, they would go on to build baseball fields, a basketball court for the inmates to use. Down the line from here, the inmates would even go on to form teams and play games against each other. So it's starting to kind of sort of develop into, like, what prisons are today. So now, with all these people now in prison, they couldn't have them eating in their cells anymore because, you know, mess, bugs, rats, we don't want all that. So in January of 1924, the dining hall was opened And for holidays and special occasions, they would let the inmates decorate the tables and the halls and all of that. So now the location of the dining hall was where some of the exercise yards were once located. There really wasn't much room in the dining hall. It's just very narrow, kind of like a very narrow hallway. And by this point, the prison was overfull. It was suffering from overcrowding issues badly, which made it difficult for the guards to monitor the dining hall like they needed to be when all the inmates were together. And this is terrifying, because by 1928, there were 1,753 inmates housed in Eastern State.
Holy shit.
Remember, when it was first opened, it was only supposed to house 250 people. 92 years later, it is 7 times that amount. Yeah. So now, at this point, a majority of these inmates housed in Eastern State are in prison for murder. So rather than just thieves and petty criminals and fraudsters, instead, we have murderers, rapists, armed robbers, and so on. So it went from housing pig thieves to housing the big dogs.
Right.
So Eastern State was actually the home to both men and women for a long time. So the women were obviously kept away from the men for obvious reasons. And then sometime in the 1920s, they were transferred to a different prison, officially making Eastern State a male-only prison. Each gender of inmate still found a way to write and send letters to each other. Now, there was one woman that did remain in the prison, and she was in prison for poisoning her husband. Yep. Shit got real, real quick here. So now, even with the removal of the female inmates, there were still well over 250 inmates housed in Eastern State.
That's insane.
And even though there was a decrease in the prison population, there was still a need for specific rooms that would be set for specific purposes. But they would, of course, still need solitary confinement. So cell block 13, which was built sometime between 1911 and 1926, became those solitary confinement cells. There were 10 blocks in cell 13, and they were very close together. Each cell was about 4 foot by 8 foot, and floor to ceiling, it was 8 feet high. So very tiny. Each room had one hole in the wall and a radiator. And if the guards wanted to be assholes, they could turn those radiators up so high that it felt like you were suffocating.
Ooh.
Because they controlled the radiators on the outside.
Right.
And then on top of that, each inmate had to sleep on an iron bed with no mattress. Yeah. So, if they really wanted to be dicks, your room's hot as hell. You have no air to breathe. You're basically suffocating. And then every night you have to lay on this hot-ass iron bed. Then you have no source for light. Now, depending on which prisoner ended up in solitary, they could end up here for up to a month.
Damn.
Yeah. So now we're going to jump to the future a little bit, to 1953. This year, the prison underwent one of the many state's investigations. And they were told that the cells they had been using for solitary were inhumane and that they needed to be destroyed. 6 years later, in 1953, cell block 15 was finally finished. So we started out with 7 cell blocks. Now we're up to 15. So 9 out of the 10 solitary cells in cell block 13 had been destroyed, but it took them several years to do it. And even though they were told to get rid of all of them, they kept one of them. Because can't nobody ever fucking listen. So by this point, the prison had doubled in size compared to what it was when it was first built. And the prison that John had when this whole thing took off was completely gone. The prison grounds were more like a giant labyrinth hidden behind 4 stone walls and an iron door. Now, when cell block 14 was built, they put hidden cells underground. Yeah. Now, the cell block had actually been designed by a prisoner that had gone to Harvard. And then just apparently decided to live a big old life of crime and end up in prison. Now, they let this guy do this because at some point, they decided that they had spent way too much money on building the prison. So they were like, okay, let's just let this guy do it. We got free labor, free blueprint, all that. We don't have to pay for shit. He's smart. Let him do it. So this guy designed it and the other prisoners built it.
That's insane.
Right. Crazy. And it's even more haunting once you know what's underneath cell block 14. So this cell block was completed in 1924 in the midst of the overcrowding issues. This was when they came up with the idea of Klondike cells. Now, these cells were specifically built for punishment, and they were underground. These cells were the size of a tomb. And the prisoners would be held in these cells underground for weeks at a time.
It's horrible.
So these cells, right, like how, I get they're in prison, but guys.
Right, they're so humid.
Right. These cells were discovered during yet another state investigation, and the prison was barred from ever using them again. But I feel like they probably continued to use them, because It would later come out that they continued to lie about a lot of things that they said they weren't doing that they actually were. So this cell block became one of the most crowded blocks in the entire prison. At one point, this block held 112 cells.
Wow.
And just this block was extremely crowded. Yeah. So now we're going to jump ahead to 1937. And this is when they add yet another structure to the prison. And this time, it's out front. So they added what is called a barbican. This was built to heighten the security of the prison because things inside were getting increasingly more and more violent. It was getting wild inside those walls, all right? By this time, there had already been a prison riot because of low wages. Because they obviously weren't paying them what they were supposed to be. They had a fire be set multiple different times. People were stabbing each other. They were all getting antsy and a little wild in here. The barbican and the addition of a metal door ultimately cost the prison $25,000.
Wow.
Yeah. Which I think was definitely needed because before the metal door was installed, it was just like a big giant wooden door. So this metal door was able to be electronically opened from a control panel inside the warden's quarters, which it's weird. Like, I'm surprised that they had this back then because it's 1937. But they did, apparently. So now the barbican is basically just a building in front of the prison so that you would have to go through there, and then that's where you would meet your family and all that, rather than sitting in the middle of the prison. So now, one of the events that most likely prompted the barbican and the new metal door was the escape of Leo Callahan. So we're going to get into some of the people that were housed here. So Leo Callahan was sent to Eastern State Penitentiary in 1928 on charges of assault and battery with intent to kill. Now, by July of 1923, he had seen enough of prison, and he decided that he was going to test the theory that this prison was inescapable. He was like, bullshit, hold my drink and watch this. I got it. So he was friendly with another prisoner named George Brown. George Brown, before he was in the penitentiary, was actually a carpenter. He was the one who had designed the 30-foot ladder that he, Leo, and four other inmates would use to escape. And he had designed the ladder so that it would be easily concealed. And it's really not as hard as you think, because he simply made it to where the ladder was in pieces. So it was broken down into 5 6-foot segments so that when it was time to escape, all they had to do was piece it together.
Mm-hmm.
They put it up against the wall and simply climbed over it. This was after they overpowered one guard, made their way to the eastern wall, because apparently that was the easiest one to climb, and that was it. They were just gone. Now, every single member of Leo's team was eventually found at some point and brought back to prison. That is except for Leo, making him the only prisoner in Eastern State Penitentiary history to successfully escape.
I'm down.
Yep. Throughout the years, there would be several more attempts. Actually, over 100 people would try and fail to escape at some point. Now, there's one big escape attempt that I'm going to tell you about. I have to introduce you to the three main key players here, though. So we have William Francis Sutton, who got to Eastern State Penitentiary in 1934. He's one of the world's most famous bank robbers. Then we have Frederick Tenuto. He worked as a hitman for the mob, and he was known as the Angel of Death. He was sent to Eastern State in 1938 after he was convicted of murder the previous year. And lastly, we have Clarence Kleindienst, I think is how you say it, who many believe is the mastermind behind the entire escape. Now, Clarence, before he was in prison, was a stonemason and a plasterer. He ended up in prison on charges of forgery, bribery, and larceny. This guy was in cell number 68 at Eastern State. And allegedly, before it was his cell, it was a storage facility in the prison. He had convinced the guards and the warden to let him clean up the cell and then let it be his. Originally, in his face. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how he convinced them, but he's like, hey, this storage closet over here looks like it'd be a great cell for somebody if only they would clean it up.
Right.
All right, you want it? Clean it up and it's yours. I imagine that's how that conversation went. Okay, so originally this was supposed to only be his cell, but he ended up having a roommate. But instead of cleaning up the cell, he got to work figuring out how to build a tunnel out of that cell. So that way he and 11 of his buddies could use it to escape. Now this was a long process, but he had been able to hide what he was doing by making a plastic mold of his own face. So that way, when he would leave his bed, he would have that mold for when the guards came to check on him.
That's smart.
Right. Then he created like this panel inside the wall that he could just put up and take down. And then he put the trash can in front of it so they wouldn't see the hole.
Damn.
Right. So obviously, like I said, this was a very long process. But by April 3rd of 1945, Clarence, Frederick, William, and 9 of their friends entered the tunnel and climbed out the other end, outside. This tunnel was 15 feet down, 97 feet out, and there were electrical lights hung out throughout the entire thing, as well as fans along the way, so that way they wouldn't get too hot.
They were smart.
Right, this thing was fucking elaborate. There were, at times, where all of them had been completely underwater. There were other points where the tunnel was only 18 inches wide. Yeah. Like, I'm not claustrophobic, but I feel like this would make me be claustrophobic.
I am claustrophobic. I'm good.
Now, eventually, though, they did make it out. Clarence, the mastermind behind all of this, he landed himself back inside pretty quick, like just a few hours after escaping. The police found him 2 blocks from the prison.
Wow. That sucks.
Right. Now, William Sutton, though, was the first that the police found. So he was found even before this guy. So he later tried to pretend that he was the mastermind behind the whole thing and even wrote a book about it. But they're like, no, sir. So another guy named James Grace, who was one of the guys that escaped with them, just one day showed back up at Eastern State by himself. He was just like, you know what? This isn't for me. I'm hungry. Let me back inside.
Damn.
Yep. Now, finally, Frederick Tenuto was found with one of the other escapees. His name was John Bocci Van Zant. And they were the last two to be found. It took the police 2 months to find them. So I've got a fun fact here about this James guy. His nickname was Bocci, and that was because he had a history of fucking up crimes. They literally called him Bocci because every crime he was a part of, he somehow botched it.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Yep. So now he and Tenuto had actually attempted to escape together just 3 years before this big tunnel escape, and they were found the very next day. So this was these two guys' second escape attempt. Once everyone was recovered from the Great Tunnel Escape, a year later, in 1946, Frederick Tenuto, William Sutton, and Clarence Clindis, I don't know how to say his last name, I'm just going to be honest, got transferred to Holmesburg Prison in Philadelphia because this prison no one had ever escaped from. That was until Clarence William Frederick and this other guy named David Einekin, who was another guy involved in the tunnel escape, tried escaping from this prison.
Damn.
So now, while police were looking for them, William Sutton had actually made his way to number one on the FBI's most wanted list. And he eventually was turned in by a barber named Arnold Schwester. And at some point after this, Arnold turned up dead, shot, having been shot to death only 2 blocks from his home.
That's crazy.
A lot of people think that Frederick Tenuto was responsible because even though they hunted for him, he was never found or heard from again. So he successfully escaped that prison.
That's insane.
So, right. So another fun fact here. In 2006, archaeologists revealed that the tunnel used for their escape was still intact.
Oh, wow.
Prison officials had said that they had blocked both ends of the tunnel and filled the tunnel in with ash. But they didn't do that because in 2006, they found evidence of the fans still in there. They saw remnants of the lights, the panels, everything.
Surprise, surprise.
Right. So some other noteworthy inmates, because there were a few at Eastern State, included Al Capone.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yep. This is why I would never want my family to live on grounds. They also had a black lab named Pep.
Named what?
Pep.
Aw.
Like, Pep had a mugshot and everything.
Damn.
So, Al Capone stepped onto the soil of Eastern State in 1929. He was there because he had been carrying a concealed weapon in a movie theater. Some people, though, think that he had actually arranged to spend time at Eastern State so that way he could avoid the St. Valentine's Day massacre in Chicago, which was where a ton of mob bosses got hit.
Mm-hmm.
He later said that he was actually haunted by the ghost of mob boss James Clark while he was in Eastern State because he was the one who had ordered the hit on James. So it was said that Al would go on to buy new uniforms for the baseball teams, and he would just listen to Walt's music on the radio, just hung out. He was just vibing, living his best life in Eastern State. But that vibe would come to an end on March 17th of 1930 when his time had been served. People everywhere, of course, heard that he was going to be leaving the prison at this day at a certain time. So they gathered outside the Eastern State waiting to catch a glimpse of the infamous Al Capone. What they didn't know was that he had made a deal with the warden. The warden had let Al leave early that morning and transferred to another prison so that he would be able to be released from that one at the same time and would avoid all the attention and potential enemies hiding in the crowd. Because at this point, the St. Valentine's Massacre had occurred and people were pissed and they knew that Al Capone had something to do with it.
That's wild.
Right. Also, he had his tonsils taken out in one of these operating rooms inside the prison.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Why? No, I don't want to have surgery in a fucking prison.
Right.
No. Okay, so like I said, there was a black lab housed in the penitentiary. His name was Pep. He posed for a mugshot. Pip was said to be in prison for murder.
Of what?
He was the dog of Governor Guilford Pinchot, and he had allegedly killed the governor's wife's cat.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, my God.
Like, I feel like it was all just a publicity stunt, you know, something to give the papers to write about.
Right.
Because they had nothing else to do on that day. But, and I really think he was just sent there to boost the inmate morale and cheer him up. But he didn't even hang out with the inmates. He did rounds with the guards. And he wasn't the only animal at Eastern State either. There was another dog there. And this one was the guard's dog. Her name was Lady.
Aww.
She was a beagle. And according to Charles Dickens, one of the inmates had a bunny in his cell when he visited. Others were said to have had cats and birds. So everybody's got a little prison pet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think the last important event to talk about before we get into the haunting of the pen is the riot that took place on January 8th of 1961. This was not the first riot, as we know, but it was the biggest in the prison's history. So, this inmate named John Klausenberg, he was walking back to his cell with a new guard. They're talking and just kind of shooting the shit on the way back to John's cell. John asked the guard, hey, do you mind if I go over here, man, you know, and stop at my friend's cell? And you just let him out real quick, just for a second. We just got to have a little chat. So this fucking idiot, okay, decides, let's just open this guy's friend's cell. So then the two of them overpowered the guard. And eventually 800 prisoners ended up being free from their cells and started trashing the prison.
Holy shit.
Which, I mean, at this point, they'd been abused. They went through all kinds of crap. So these guys just went nuts. They set rooms on fire, like the record room. They stole from the pharmacy. They cut the phone lines. They were stabbing guards. They were beating them up, stealing the guard uniforms and putting them on themselves. So it became a situation where, like, who is who? It got so bad that the city police, the state troopers, and the deputy prison warden himself had to mastermind an operation in the middle of this entire thing just to figure out how to take power back. So they came up with a plan that they called Operation Prison Breakout. And eventually they were able to regain control of the prison. But for a little while, there were guards locked in cells with prisoners because the prisoner had stole guard uniforms. So they didn't know who was who.
Mm-hmm.
So they just had to lock everybody in cells together until they were able to figure it out.
That's wild.
Right. This is like the orange is the new black type shit going on.
Mm-hmm.
So Joseph Barley was working as deputy warden that day, and he was credited as being the mastermind behind Operation Prison Breakout. So he kind of helped, you know, gain the control back. Later, he would become warden, but not before the district attorney announced that the prison was in danger to everyone in the city nearby. Nah, shit. I think we're all aware of that. So it would later come out that the goal of this riot was just another prison escape.
Damn.
Some of the prisoners had come up with the idea that everyone would be distracted while they headed down to the garage on site and stole a truck to leave. However, when they got to the garage, the city police had already arrived and the police took them into custody.
Didn't work out, my guy.
No. But by the time this happened, prisoners were armed with meat cleavers.
Shit.
So they weren't just walking in there. But no. None of the prisoners were killed during this riot, by the way. One of them, however, was left with a fractured skull.
Ooh.
Like, his family was brought into the prison to say goodbye. He was given his last rites and everything because they didn't think he was going to live. But then, miraculously, he survived.
Mm.
Then finally, 10 years later, so 1971, the prison was officially closed.
Nice.
Like, it took you forever.
Mm-hmm.
So all the remaining inmates were moved to the state correctional institution at Greater Ford. And for a long time, people had different ideas about what they should do with the building. Then some suggested that they should just build condos there.
Nah, I'm good.
Let's just turn this prison into condos. No big deal. Okay. So for a long time, the building ended up being abandoned. Nobody could decide what to do with it. And eventually, it was declared a semi-ruin. Then in 2000, it was added to the list of the 100 most endangered sites by the World's Monuments list. Now, in 2002, it was actually removed from that list, and eventually the site became a museum. It took a long time to preserve the building, and the whole idea was never to restore it back to its original. They wanted to preserve it the way it was and make it a museum. Now, while people were working on that, there was a story that emerged. There was a man named Dan McLeod. He was a city worker, and he was working on the project to get it up and running. While he was there, he realized that there were a whole bunch of, like, feral cats living inside the building. Just a colony of fucking cats. So this man took it upon himself to go 3 times a week to feed all the cats. Now, he passed away in 2003. But in 2004, this artist named Linda Brenner made an art installation called Ghost Cat. And it was installed in the museum in 2004 in the memory of not only the cat population, but Dan himself, the cat man. So now that you know the history and a cute little story, I'm going to tell you about the haunting. So each cell block seems to offer something a little different. Cell block 12 is often brought up by haunting experts. There have been many reports of people hearing echoing voices, strange clanking, and seeing apparitions of shadowy figures. Others have claimed to hear disembodied voices, creepy whispers, and an overwhelming feeling of dread. This block is a popular spot that many investigators visit while touring the penitentiary. Some videos captured that you can find on YouTube by visitors have shown the apparition of a man walking through the cell block.
We should go visit it.
Well, you might change your mind.
Oh, okay.
Because this is all, it's all lighthearted, right?
Right.
Cell block 4 is said to be the scariest of them all. When the prison was totally abandoned and they were working on it, getting it together for the tours and all of that, they had to hire a locksmith. This man's name was Gary Johnson, in order to actually get into cell block 4 because it was locked. So while he was removing the lock, he said that as soon as he removed it, he felt a sudden force take over his body and he felt as though he was being held up, like he could not move. He said he felt very negative and horrible and that this force would not let him go. Then all of a sudden in front of him, there were swirling faces on the walls and one of them was calling his name.
Oh.
Those who visit cell block 4 have claimed to see chilling visions of ghostly faces that appear to be deeply tormented. Some have said that these faces beckon them over to get a closer look. Along with those macabre images, people have also reported hearing strange noises, as well as feeling that same sense of uneasy and being unwelcome that Gary Johnson did.
That's crazy.
Yep. Do you still want to go?
I think it'd be interesting. I don't know when I got there how I'd feel.
Right. We're not done yet, though. So next is cell block 6. Here it is said that you will see shadowy figures dart along the walls or appear and fade quickly across them. The spirits appear as haunting black silhouettes. However, they're not confined to this one specific area, and they have been seen making their way along the walls throughout the entire penitentiary.
Damn.
Yeah, so you just have black figures just following you everywhere.
Yeah, that's... No, I'm good.
Right, exactly. Now, people say that when you go on tours, there's towers that used to be used as lookouts over the yards. So, the watchtowers. People say that on tours, if you look up, you'll still see one of the guards standing inside the watchtower.
Yikes.
Yeah. No, thank you. Now, for the prison cell blocks as a whole, visitors have felt a great darkness that they can't explain. People have mentioned hearing strange voices, feeling cold spots in certain areas, and even the feeling of being touched or scratched by a dark entity.
Oh.
They say you'll hear screaming and yelling inside the prison, that you'll hear the rattling of bars and keys.
That's creepy. Mm-hmm.
It was so bad that up until 2008, you had to sign a waiver to enter the building.
Damn, really?
They said that it was because the risk of harm, because the building was old, there's asbestos, it's falling apart. Yeah. I think it was a waiver for the fucking ghosts.
A ghost waiver?
Yes. You get possessed or a ghost harm you, we are not responsible.
You're on your own, my guy.
Pretty much. But despite the danger, people go on tours and they hear all of these things. And they have really leaned into the haunted name that the prison has been given. So if you ever go for Halloween, they have this event all through spooky season leading up to Halloween night. I think it starts like the very beginning of September, I believe. And it's called Halloween Nights. So are you ready for this?
Yes.
The website says the terror behind the wall includes 4 haunted houses, 3 immersive walkthrough experiences, 3 live and interactive performances, a light show, campfire ghost stories. They have 2 gift shops, a trick-or-treat store, 4 themed bars and lounges, and this includes a speakeasy inside Al Capone's cell.
Ooh, that would be cool.
I just want to go for the speakeasy.
That's what I'm saying. Really cool, dude.
I don't care about the rest of it. I just want to go for the speakeasy.
Yeah.
You're also given 3 opportunities to explore all of the cell blocks, so you get to experience the haunting for yourself. At one point, there was an audio tour that you could take, which was voiced by Stevie Buscemi, who we all know from movies like Big Daddy, Grown Ups, and Hubie Halloween. And that's just a few of them. And as if it could not get any better, they've also used this site for a couple of movies.
Ooh.
So first was the 1995 movie 12 Monkeys, which I've never seen that movie.
Mm-mm.
Sounds weird as fuck. They also used it in the 2009 Transformers Revenge of the Fallen.
Oh, good movie.
And then some smaller, lesser known movies. Yep. And that's the Eastern State Penitentiary.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, I think we should
look up some, I don't know.
You said you wanted to?
I just want to do the speakeasy, man.
But
fuck
maybe,
the rest of it.
But yeah, maybe we could check into it and just do that part. Be like, we're going to opt out of all the rest of it. We're just going to do this one.
Right. Like, I like scary stuff, but I don't know how I feel about going somewhere that everybody knows is haunted, because I would be the bitch that the shit would attach to.
We could do a podcast on it if it happened. We could interview you.
Right. Like, Daxton already has like a little shadow friend in my house. I don't need anything evil.
Yeah, that is true.
Right. We've lived here for 2 years and Daxton's little shadow friend has never caused any problem. He just kind of stands there and then just disappears. Never had anything crazy. I'm not trying to mess up the feng shui over here with the something vibe attaching to me. Yeah, we ain't trying to mess up the vibe. Because our house is old.
Yeah.
Only God knows how many spirits are actually in our house that we don't know about. And I don't need some outside spirit coming in and just messing the whole thing up.
Well, maybe we should do a Ouija board live here.
We ain't doing that. You done lost your mind.
I think we should.
No. You done lost your ever-loving mind. I don't play with no Ouija board. Okay? That's too much for me. We don't know enough about the other side for me to just dive into it. We don't know the rules over there. I mean, maybe they can only attach to people during certain times. We don't know.
Yeah, we should figure it out.
I'm good.
Okay. I try.
You can do it at your house. You can do
there
it at your house.
It shouldn't happen to this dumb house.
Right, exactly. See?
But you got a shadow person. So we should do it there. That's even more reason to do it at your house. I don't see shit. But watch, now tonight, I'm going to wake up in the middle of the night and I'm going to be seeing all kinds of shit because of you. Thanks.
What if my shadow person, well, it's not my shadow person. It's Daxton's shadow person. He's the only one that's ever seen it. What if his shadow person then gets mad and then starts acting crazy?
I don't know. I'll be at home after we do it.
See?
You'll just have to videotape it and show me.
What if he, like, attacks Daxton in the middle of the night or something? Or it. I don't know if it's a he or a she.
Now, see, you had to say some shit like that.
See?
No.
He's the only one that can see it.
I can't do that to Daxton.
See? You'll make his friend not his friend no more.
Right. I don't know if
That's what Daxton was telling Bryce about earlier.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's what he thinks it's the lady that used to own the house. Her older son that passed away, that drowned in the pond. He thinks that it's him.
Oh, that's
sad. And that
sad.
He's like just attached to this house because he grew up in this house.
Right. Could be.
Yeah, it's probably, that's why I told him. I was like, it could be.
Yeah. Bryson said that's creepy.
Yeah, he's only ever seen him at night when he was going to bed. When we first moved in, it scared the shit out of him. Like, he did not want to sleep in his bedroom because it freaked him the fuck out.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, scared the shit because he had never... The only thing that he said he had ever seen before was my grandma, who would come to him in his sleep.
Right.
My dad's mom. And then he seen that, and he was like, it's just a black figure. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, I'm like, oh. So we went up to the... What is that shop up here? The gypsy store up here?
Uh-huh.
Holistic Gypsy, that's what it's called. We went up there and we got some sage. And we explained to him what it was. Sage, it gets rid of bad spirits. So if there's anything still here after we do it, then it's not bad.
Right.
So we opened all the windows, opened all the doors, saged it. Because that's what you're supposed to do. So we did all that. And then he still sees it. So he's like, well, it must not be bad. So now
That's good.
Yeah, and I mean, we've lived here for 2 years and nothing's ever, so it must not be bad.
Right.
He's like, it doesn't talk to me. It just kind of stands there. He said it kind of waved at him one time and then it just vanished. I'm like, okay, whatever, I guess.
That's crazy.
As long as it's not mean, I guess we can live in harmony.
Right.
Once you start being mean and we have some problems, then you're going to have to go.
Right. You're out. Evicted.
Right. Okay. I don't think anybody cares about Daxton's little shadow.
Never know.
But that's it. That's all we got. Eastern State Penitentiary.
Done. Finally. After the... Yep. This is the fourth time trying to record this one.
Yep. And we finally got it done. Yep. Yeah. Finally got it.
Hopefully it recorded.
Oh, God. I'm going to be so mad if it did not.
If
I'm
going to
be so pissed.
I'm done. I'm done.
Right. We're done.
It's a wrap.
It's still going. The timer is. So
we'll see.
Yep. We'll see. Yep. That is it. Let me see. We are not doing a bonus episode for August because starting September 5th all the way to Halloween, you will get a bonus on every Friday for spooky season. We're not doing a bonus episode this month. That's coming up. Next week we got a good episode, and then I believe it's the week after that. We're in spooky season.
I can't wait.
Start September 1st. I'm so excited to put my Halloween decorations up.
Girl, me too.
I'm waiting for that shit to get in the store so I can buy new ones.
I know.
Get my zombies out. Put them in the ground.
Yeah.
There's last year there was a little boy. His mom would take him on a walk every day. And she told Mama that she had to walk him past here every single day to see if we put any new decorations out.
Oh, that's y'all are gonna have to go all out this year.
She was like, he loves your decorations. I guess the creepy pumpkin blow up that we have. She said that was his favorite.
Oh,
he's like three.
Oh.
Yep, I know. I'm like, you're so cute. Yep, but that's it. That's all we got.
All right.
All right. Give us a rate, a review. Make sure you subscribe so you get new notifications, especially with spooky season coming up. It's right around the corner. I think it's, 2 weeks out now?
Yeah.
Make sure you hit that subscribe or follow button, whichever you have. And that's all we got. So we hope you keep listening and remember to
watch for monsters.
And don't kill people. Bye, y'all.
Bye, y'all.